This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 98, recorded live Wednesday, October the 7th. And CJ and I are going to talk a little bit about the Windows 10 device event that happened on October the 6th.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Andrew Connell.
And I'm Chris Johnson.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
Good morning, CJ. How are you doing?
Oh, yeah. Pretty good, babe. Pretty good.
Really ho-hum there. Man, what you been up to?
No, I'm only kidding, man. I'm only kidding. I just thought I'd switch it up, you know?
I see you're recording live from the new offices.
I am. We're in our new offices in Kirkland, and I'm sitting here looking at a drizzly Seattle day, unfortunately. It was beautiful the other day.
I thought that's just called a Seattle day.
Yeah. Let me know when you're done. Yeah. I'm only kidding. Yeah, it's been a beautiful summer, but yes, we're in the new offices. It's great. Great to be in.
Awesome. So what you been up to?
Getting set up, to be honest. I mean, I've been having to deal with painters and wallpapers and building furniture and all sorts of things, man. It's kind of crazy. Like this, I mean, eventually we'll get around to doing some actual work.
I found it funny because I saw on Facebook that there was apparently a fire in an office near, like in your building, but like on your floor, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I thought I left Microsoft to stop fighting fires, but turns out we moved into our new building and then you know, people were running around the hallway. This was 2 days ago. And a colleague of mine went out and was like, what's going on? And they were like, there's a fire in the office. We're like, why isn't the fire alarm going? Like, I don't know. And turns out everybody else was like just running for the stairs. And my co-founder and I, Brian, were like, well, why don't we go put it out? Like, how big is this thing? And they're like, we don't know because it's in a locked office. So we ran down the hallway into this person's offices. And sure enough, there was a door that was locked to this guy's office. And I put my hand on the door and it wasn't hot. Touched the door handle, wasn't hot. Put my hand under the door, wasn't hot. But there was smoke coming out from underneath the door. And I was like, well, that can't be good. But surely it's not that big, right?
Yeah, right.
And so we kicked the door in. And it was like a fire door, right? So it's like a full core door. And I think I broke a rib in the process. Still got tweaky ribs. But anyway, so we kicked the door in and then rushed in there with fire extinguishers. And turns out there was like a mini tower PC that had caught fire under this guy's desk. And and was like sitting there on fire. And we're like, all right, well, so we put that out and got the fire extinguishers, put it out, opened the balcony door, and then took this smoldering remains of a PC out onto the balcony and yeah, took it outside. So yeah, so we put out the fire. And weirdly enough, the fire alarm in the building didn't go off.
Oh, that's not good.
And I figured out why. There was no smoke detector in this particular office. There was one right outside, but the smoke out in the hallway wasn't enough to set the smoke alarm off. I was like, well, how big does this fire have to get before there's enough smoke to set off the nearest fire detector, right?
Yeah.
So that was a little shifty. But anyway, people were like, well, why did you do it? And I was like, because I didn't want the office I just moved into to burn down. I spent ages moving all this furniture. I don't want to have to move again.
I don't want to do this crap again.
Yeah, exactly.
So I find it kind of ironic, though, that, I mean, you don't have, you haven't built a product yet, and you're already putting fires out.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
This is going to be, this is going to be interesting.
Hopefully we're doing it the right way around, putting out the fires first.
Yeah. So you haven't affected any customer data yet, so we're good.
Exactly, yeah. And our server room is really hilarious because it's got like one switch in it. And I asked the building people to turn off the HVAC to the room because there's just no heating requirements in there, right? And there was a big fan going, it was noisy. And so we've turned it off and they're like, well, is the heat going to be a problem? I was like, no. Aren't you going to put servers in here? No, man. We're the cloud, bro. There's no servers in here. And so now I've made up a little sign for the door of the server room. It just says, the cloud. And then there's nothing in there. It's awesome.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. How about you?
Man, last weekend I had what for me is almost as close to a religious experience as I could have. I have been dying to see the Foo Fighters in concert. And about 2 months ago, my wife and I just said, you know what, let's do it. They were coming to Atlanta. So we got two tickets to a general admission show in Atlanta. And it was unbelievable. We stayed, it was really cool. We stayed in the Westin, which I don't know if you're familiar with Atlanta, but there's a, the tallest building in Atlanta, or one of the tallest buildings in Atlanta, is the Circle Hotel that just goes straight up. And it's the one that when there was a tornado in Atlanta a couple of years ago or last year that had a bunch of windows knocked out from the tornado. And so we were on the 51st floor. We were looking down right on Centennial Park. We could see the stage. We saw them testing the lights and everything. But and it rained for like 75% of the show, but it was just unbelievable. They were at the top of my list of bands that I wanted to see. And of course, you know, you go to a concert, so now they're off the list, but they halfway through the show, I'm like, I've got to see these guys again. The thing that gets me about these guys is that they look like they genuinely have an absolute blast doing what they do. And they look like they genuinely have more fun when you are having fun.
Yeah.
So it's just, I know you saw them out in Seattle. It was absolutely incredible.
I totally get what you're saying there, right? Like they genuinely look like they're having an absolute blast and don't look like they're just sort of going through the motions, you know?
No, they look like they're having fun. I mean, they look like they're having fun. They look like they're having a good time. And they, when they're like, you know, we don't want to stop playing. It's like, I buy it. I'm looking at you. I'm like, you look like you don't want to stop playing. So.
Yeah, they're one of my favorite bands. And I loved their show. It was really cool. I've seen them two or three times now. But way back, like the first Foo Fighters show was like not long after their first album. I think when they toured the first time, but anyway, it was, yeah, I've got one of his drumsticks. I think he played the drums in that tour for a couple of songs, but yeah, they're an awesome band.
It's a great show. So, and then I guess this week I'm just finished getting all my stuff together as I'm heading over to Europe tomorrow to do the SharePoint Saturday in Munich on, I think that's October the 10th. I think that's the day. Is that Saturday, the Saturday right around the 10th? And then on, then taking a train up to Amsterdam and doing the Unity Connect conference on Monday, Tuesday. I have a session. So I'm doing three sessions I've done before, but I'm doing one session that's brand new. And I'm a little frustrated now that I've spent so much time working on it because it's a 20-minute session.
Mm.
And it's all about using free tools to do JavaScript performance analysis. And so I'm going to show just using the Chrome dev tools and a couple of scripts that I've kind of acquired over the last few months.
Nice.
To do a bunch of performance monitoring. And so I show, like, I have this little site that I got from someone else, but it's about finding prime numbers and showing how we go from figuring out 100,000 prime numbers and bringing that from, I think we start around taking 12 seconds for it to run to down to 250 milliseconds and all the steps that we go through to kind of make it faster.
Yeah, nice.
And then also showing some Angular type performance stuff too. So just some tips and tricks. And I'm right now, I have absolutely zero slides and I don't think I'm going to build any slides. I'm just like, we got to get going.
Let's go.
We got to go.
Hey, it's a performance session. You might as well be performant in the session, right?
Exactly. Slides aren't performant. They're slow.
Exactly.
They take up time. Anyway. Hey, so yesterday there was a big event.
There was a couple of things announced.
Oh my God. And we thought, even though this is the cloud show, we're going to take some liberties here because you know what? We've done 97 shows. So we're going to do the 98th one. We're going to have a little bit of fun. Actually, 100, we're going to have some fun.
Yeah, we'll talk about hardware.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about hardware today. So yesterday, Microsoft had their Windows 10 device event. And I'm an Apple guy right now. So I use a MacBook Pro. I have an iPhone. I have an iPad. I personally prefer OS X over Windows. I don't spend hardly any time in Windows. But, you know, it's not. I'm a Microsoft guy. And I don't think that you have to be one or the other if you're Apple or Microsoft or Google or whatever. You just use the best thing of what you want to use. And yesterday was all about announcing some of their devices for Windows 10. And I was genuinely impressed with what Microsoft has done.
I was pretty impressed. Yeah, like I think there were a few things that we all expected were coming, and then there were a couple that we were like, "Oh snap, didn't expect that one."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was really nice. I just thought it was a really good event. Like they did pretty well in the presentation. They kind of nailed the announcements, and the offerings are great. So that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, we'll talk about the devices in a second, but I think that some of the big takeaways for me on it were, I thought that it was, like you said, I thought the event was very well done. In the past, they've always seemed very sterile. Mm. They always seem very sterile. They always seem kind of like keynotes at a conference kind of a thing. And personally, it's never been that impressive to me. It's never been that exciting. I've always been like, yeah, I don't have to watch this. I'll just get the bullet points later. Mm. But I thought that it was done very well. In addition, I also thought that the ads that they showed were like, they were Apple quality ads, I should say. I thought they were like movie quality ads. They were really well done compared to ads of Microsoft in the past. But the big thing for me was the presenters. I think there was like two or three presenters that I thought they just nail it. Yeah. The guy, Panos Panay?
Yeah, Panos, yeah.
The Surface guy, I thought knocked it out. I saw some people saying he's a little arrogant or whatever. I thought he was fantastic. I thought he was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I thought he did a very nice job. So then we've got phones, watches or bands, surfaces, and some new hardware as well, right? So
absolutely.
Should we go from smallest to largest?
That's what she said. Yeah, so this one, I liked it. First one, I guess from smallest, would be the band. So the Microsoft Band 2 is...
You're a band user.
I am. I'm a band user. I love it. I'm on my second one. The first one, the metal kind of corroded a bit and was having issues, so they just replaced it for me. Classic V1 hardware thing, so I wasn't really disappointed by it. But I love my band. I use it. I'm a runner. I love it for running. It's to me, it's almost like the perfect device for running, because I can just. It's kind of like that whole term they use for the phones for a while, glance and go. I mean, that's when I'm running, I can just flip my wrist up and I can see what my pace is, what my heart rate is, and what my current distance is, and I don't have without having to try and like do some weird yoga move while I'm running to see my phone. So this is, I love the band. Yesterday, what they announced some stuff, and then there's some stuff that's actually happened since then that they did not announce that's actually pretty useful. So the announcement piece was that Band 2 is the hardware is a nicer form factor. It's more rounded around your wrist using what's called Gorilla Glass 2, which is super thin, but also very sensitive, but scratch resistant. So that's one of the downsides of the current band is that if you don't have a screen protector on your screen, it scratches really easy. Like mine is all nicked up because every one of those, when you have a screen protector on something like this, whenever you put it in your pocket, if you've ever put your hand in your pocket, it kept catching. And I went through, the screen protector is like $10 a pop. So you spend, $200 on a band, and then you turn around and you're spending what, like $10 on screen protectors. I think I spent like $40 on screen protectors and finally said, screw this.
Yeah, it looks nice, like the Band 2. I think I'm not a Band 1 user or a band user, I should say. So, I'm not saying this from firsthand experience, but the Band 1 to me always looked a little clunky, like not necessarily in a really bad way, but like a little edgy and a little bit, it stuck out a little bit. And the second one looks like it would fit a lot better. It's sort of more curved. The screen's curved more and it sort of fits around your wrist a bit better, maybe. I mean, I'd love to try one on.
Yeah, I did take notice that all the presenters yesterday had them on. The girl that announced it, Satya at the very end had it, Panos Panay had one on. I noticed that they all had the band on. And I looked at it on each person's wrist and they all, like you said, they fit really well. Where the one now, it does feel a little, it's got a little bit of an edge to it. Like if you're used to wearing like a big watch,
yeah,
it's got that feel to it, but it's got a couple extra edges that don't really feel that right. But Band 1 is fine. I'm not going to rush out and go buy Band 2. I will if my Band 1 dies. It looks impressive. But the other thing they did too is they updated the Microsoft Health app, at least on iOS yesterday, got rid of the purple color, now went to a Microsoft blue, which is nice. But
nice.
It's pretty cool. The updates that they did to it are pretty impressive. And there's some features that I noticed that they did not talk about in the band yesterday. Like when you're running, it actually will, it can do, they did mention elevation. It does do elevation now. But they noticed that when you're exercising, it apparently will automatically do samples of the current UV. And it does that throughout the day. And so you can see when you're running what your UV, I don't know what you call that, consumption is throughout the day and what your overall like exposure was throughout the day. Whereas now you have to open an app up and say, measure the current UV. So you wait till you're outside, you do it, you can check. Now it actually automatically does that in the background and records that during your run or just throughout the day.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. So that wasn't there before. I noticed that when I updated the app last night. So
yeah, I need to go try one on because it's, it'd be pretty, it looks much nicer and a better fit for me. But it's definitely still like a fitness device as opposed to a general, watch style wearable, right?
Well,
at least it's sort of, I mean, it has some other functions and stuff, but if somebody was looking at this versus, say, an Apple Watch, for example, they've served quite two quite different purposes.
There is a lot of overlap. I agree. There is a lot of overlap, but I do find some stuff like, I mean, you've got the watch aspect to it. It does, you know, notify you. You can turn this on and off. When you get a phone call, when you get a text, when you get a calendar alert, when you get emails. And so that stuff is nice when you're driving or running. You can kind of glance down and see that stuff. But yet the one thing it doesn't do that I keep seeing people who are fitness people that they say is, you know, I want to be able to store like a playlist or store like, you know, 20 some odd songs on the band so I can run without my phone. Me personally, that doesn't bother me because I'm going to use my phone for my music. I'm always going to take my phone when I run. Just because.
Yeah, because you want GPS and stuff as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, the band does GPS, but I want...
Oh, it does?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Unlike the Apple Watch, which you have to have, you have to have the phone with you to do GPS. But I don't know. I mean, I've had times where I've done something during a run and I needed somebody to come pick me up. I mean, one or two times. And having that is nice. Or, you know, being able to text somebody is nice. So,
all right. So next size up is the Lumia 950 and 950 XL, right?
Mm-hmm. The phones.
The two new Windows phones. So my first impression of this was like, dang, that's a nice piece of hardware.
Yeah.
Really, like, very nicely designed. You know, the 950 is the smaller one. The 950 XL is larger screen, obviously. They got like, you know, 20 megapixel cameras or something along those lines. And so really nicely designed hardware. But then along with that, I think these are the first actual like proper phones that support Continuum,
yeah,
which was that plug your phone into a screen and a keyboard through a little dock. And suddenly you kind of got like a...
You have Windows 10.
Yeah, exactly. But not the full desktop Windows 10, but you got like sort of the iPad version of Windows 10, right? The tablet version of Windows 10.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think it was pretty full featured. I mean, what the guy, you could even copy stuff over with a USB stick.
Yeah, you can't run like Win32 apps on it, for example.
No. But I mean, you could do like Office, you could work on a document. It was enough that if you were at a conference or you could go on a trip and take just your phone and plug it into something in your hotel room.
Oh, yeah.
To be productive.
But all I was getting at is like, it's not the equivalent of your desktop PC.
No. Right. It's not. But the Continuum thing is pretty impressive what they've done.
It's amazing. Yeah. But it requires specific hardware to do it, I believe. And but due to video rendering and all that sort of stuff. So they've got this little dock called the Display Dock, which they're going to sell, which you plug into your phone. And then I guess into that you plug your screen and, you know, keyboard and mouse if you want it.
Mm.
So that'll be kind of nice. You know, having said all this, right, great features and all that sort of stuff. But at the end of the day, it boils down to ecosystem, right? So you're going to have to make the call, do I want to be a Windows Phone user or an iOS user or an Android user? And if you're saying you want to be a Windows Phone user, you've got to deal with the Windows Phone ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, like, I still think there's merit and still think there's hope that with Windows 10, people installing Windows 10 for desktops, that there'll be enough of a developer ecosystem targeting that platform.
Mm.
That Windows Phone will get a trickle-down effect of better apps for it as well, with people predominantly targeting Windows 10, but then those apps working with a little bit more incremental effort, but not a whole bunch more incremental effort to get it working on Windows Phone.
Hmm.
You know, bit different UI and things like that. So I hold out hope for the ecosystem. I mean, I've got an app in the ecosystem, and I'm seriously considering doing a big rev of my Windows app first and foremost, and catching all those Windows users.
Yeah, I kind of had the same impression as you did. I mean, I looked at it and was like, awesome piece of hardware, very impressive, but it's Windows. It's Windows 10. And it seemed to me, I was like, I was very impressed with the phone itself. I was very impressed with what it could do. I was like, and it was a little bit depressing to me because I looked at it in that was my reaction. I was like, it's still Windows 10. And I'm like, I wonder what Microsoft can really do anything in this space. Because that is a first class phone. That is, I mean, that measures up there with all the other best phones that are out there. You can pop an SD card in there. I mean, he said something about 2 terabytes being able to pop a micro SD card in, and
Whoa. You've
got like, you know, a ridiculous amount of data in the phone. I mean, I don't know what else you would want to do on that phone. But I mean, like for someone like me, I look at it and say, I have iMessage text messaging that runs on my phone, on my tablet, and on my laptop, and it's going to be pretty hard to pull me away from that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's all doable, right? It's just switching ecosystems is hard.
Yeah, it is.
So, I mean, imagine if they came out with this phone a few years ago, and from a user's point of view, like a consumer's point of view, they would have been, oh, yeah, I want that phone.
Yep.
And then developers would have targeted it for sure.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, it's a bit of a catch-22. But I do think there's definitely something to the story of Windows 10 is going to be everywhere. Like, I think that's inevitable. Like, that's just the case with Windows versions, but they just take a while to roll out.
Yeah.
And then hopefully the dev ecosystem will be attractive to that, you know, to big Windows and trickle down to the phone.
Yeah.
That's my
and they said they have,
I hope.
They had something like, 110 million people that are on Windows 10 now. So that's not a drop in the bucket.
It's inevitable. And I don't say that tongue in cheek or arrogantly. It's just like Windows takes time to roll out, but it's inevitable that there will be hundreds of millions of them.
That's true. You know, the one thing that I thought was the most, probably the least amount of fanfare during the event yesterday, I guess the next size up, is HoloLens. When we first saw that was like epic.
Oh, true.
And to me, I was just like, yeah, I'm just not as interested in that as all the other stuff. I mean, the thing about HoloLens to me is that, I mean, they showed a guy on stage that had like a hologram like thing on his arm that was using it to like shoot aliens coming out. They showed the gaming aspect to it. I see it and it's kind of neat, but that's like that's the last thing to me that's interesting about HoloLens is the gaming aspect. To me, it's the
commercial side.
Oh, it's the commercial side. It's the science. It's the research and development. It's the being able to, I'd love to put one of those on and like when you're driving, or I'd love to put one of those on when you're like doing when you're watching a football game or a sporting event. I'd love to be able to see the kind of stuff you can do with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. They talked about HoloLens as well.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, it's the next step on the journey for HoloLens, right? They've launched a developer program, start getting people building stuff with it more widely than just a handful of early tap customers. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that. You've got to get devs excited about trying it out and building apps for it. So we'll see. But I think the center of gravity will be commercial first, at least anyway. I just see so many applications for that technology in commercial scenarios.
I agree. Commercial, education, science, research.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, was it they announced the developer kit. It's available, I think they say now, it's available soon for like $3,000, I think is what they said.
Yeah.
Impressive.
For the dev kit.
Now, you want to get into the really interesting stuff?
Yeah, bigger stuff. Should we go Surface Pro 4, I guess, is the next size up?
Yeah.
So we're at 13. So the Surface Book, which was the new one,
yeah,
new laptop, that's 13.5-inch screen.
Yeah.
But then the Surface Pro 4, I believe, is it a 13-inch screen? Something like that.
Yeah, so Surface Pro 4 is the next thing we go on, which is that's the fourth iteration of the Surface. I don't really want to call it a tablet because it's really like a...
It's a two-in-one.
It's a two-in-one. Okay. So, well, they're both two-in-ones, I guess you could say.
Oh, God. Yeah, now you're confusing me.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
It's Surface Pro 4 is the next iteration from the very successful Surface 3. This has been very impressive to see how successful Microsoft has been with the Surface line. I'm very impressed with the Surface Pro 4. So they were able to... So the footprint of the machine is the exact same. The big takeaways for me were footprint of the machine, exact same. But the screen is bigger by making the bezel smaller, or the bevel smaller for the screen. So you have more screen real estate. You have a new keyboard that is very much more, it's got like, the keys look much more like the keys that you have on the new MacBooks, where it's got like that scissor kind of view to it. So it feels like a real key instead of it feeling like an afterthought keyboard kind of a thing.
Yep.
The touchpad is what, 40% bigger, they said, and it's got a fingerprint reader.
Yeah, there's a fingerprint option for the keyboard. I don't think it's on all of them necessarily.
Okay.
And there was some weird call out in one of the slides that the fingerprint reader was only for US only, which was really strange.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know what that was about.
I didn't see that.
And then the other thing that I thought was pretty cool about the new keyboard is that it's backwards compatible with the Surface Pro 3.
Yeah.
So if you like the new keys, you can drop it on your Surface Pro 3 and you're good to go.
Yeah.
That's pretty sweet.
So there's a couple of things they did to it is you can get it as up to 16 gigs of RAM.
Yeah, double the RAM, right? Up to double the RAM.
Yeah, up to double the RAM. And you can get a 1 terabyte drive to go with it as well, which, and I think what fully maxed out, it came out to $2,699. So $2,700 for a fully maxed out Surface Pro 4. with a keyboard, I think.
Or was that the next one?
No. So that they both have the same price listing. The difference is, okay, let's focus just on the Service Pro 4, because I think that we can definitely kind of go back and forth on it. The Service Pro 4 has, if you max it out with 16 gigs of RAM, 1 terabyte drive, you can do it's $26.99. And I can't remember is if that also includes one of the new keyboards or if the new keyboard is separate.
Oh yeah, it was $26.99 for 1 terabyte 16 gig Core i7 processor.
Yeah.
This is what's going to be confusing, right? Because now that the two are in quite close categories.
Yeah.
So the second one, the Surface Book, it's more laptop style with a hard hinge, but detachable. So it's still kind of in the same category as a 2-in-1.
Yes. I'm talking to somebody about this. One of my neighbors is going to do one or the other, and he's not sure which one he's going to do. He's asking me, I've just got another email from him. He's like, well, you know, which one would you do? I'm like, it's tempting. Both of them are tempting. For me personally, I think it looks like it's going to come down to, if you want a physical keyboard, one that where if you're going to use it, if you want to be able to use it sitting on your lap, and if you don't like the flimsy kind of a keyboard that kind of makes it kind of bounce a little bit when you're typing, if you're doing on your lap or on a desktop, then you want the Surface Book. But it's a little bit bigger. It's a little bit thicker. The hinge has this interesting kind of gap at the hinge when you close it.
Yeah.
It doesn't really bother me all that much. I mean, it looks a little awkward, but it doesn't bother me. But
no.
It doesn't seem like when it's closed, it's going to be as small as the Surface Pro 4.
Yep, no, that's for sure. It's not quite as flat, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's more of a wedge, right?
Yeah, it's more of a wedge.
The cool thing about it, though, right, is it has a dedicated GPU in the keyboard. Mm-hmm. So when you detach or when you pull them apart, the tablet portion still keeps running. It's still got a Core i7 in it and all that sort of stuff, except you're not driving a dedicated GPU anymore. And so battery, you know, is better and things like that. Mm. And you can sort of leave the heavy part of the keyboard behind if you just want to go into tablet mode. Mm. And, you know, I think that's a really interesting choice for people that are trying to decide between a laptop and an iPad, for example, who want to just have one device that they could do both with. For me personally, like, I've had a Surface Pro 3 for quite a long time, and there's not very many times I take the keyboard off.
Really?
I don't know about you, but like me personally, I just sort of I flip the keyboard around, but I very rarely actually take it off.
Yeah, I have an iPad and I have a Bluetooth keyboard. I actually have the Microsoft Universal Bluetooth keyboard for my iPad.
Oh, yeah.
And I use it for typing. And I only pull the keyboard out when, like if I'm at a conference and I don't want to walk around my laptop, I'll take my keyboard and my laptop, throw them in one of those little small like athletic like string bags and use that as my device for the day. It works great. I only take the keyboard if I want to be able to type something on it or if I want to be like to take notes or something. But yeah, I mean, I think it actually it's going to be a hard choice. It's going to be interesting to see what people go with. I'm looking forward to being able to play with it in the store. I think it's going to be available at the end of October.
Something like that. October 26th or 27th, something like that.
Yeah, so I'm interested to walk in the store and be able to play with both of them.
If you put a gun to my head right now and made me pick, I'd pick the Book for sure, Surface Book.
Yeah, so that's my attitude too. I tell you, the thing that did impress me, they did show a demo showing the performance of this, and they were comparing it to a MacBook. I'm thinking that when they're doing like with a MacBook and a MacBook Pro, and my understanding is that if you're comparing it to a MacBook Pro, you're kind of comparing it to you're kind of comparing it as like a hybrid. You're kind of comparing it to the MacBook Pro 13-inch because that's really the form factor.
Yep.
But you're also comparing it to the 15-inch because the 15 has a dedicated GPU option as well.
Correct. Yeah.
And same kind of maxed out 16 gigs, same proc, same 1 terabyte drive. The one thing that impressed me on the performance side that he did was that when he opened up Adobe Premiere and he threw a bunch of videos together and started playing the rendering of the video and then added transitions while the video was still playing and showed it just everything running nice and smooth. And I think he did that with the Pro. I think he did that with the Book. I don't think he did that with the Surface Pro. I tell you, as someone who uses Adobe Premiere on a MacBook Pro, now mine is the late 2013 version of it. Holy crap, man. What that thing did, that's impressive.
Yeah.
My MacBook Pro kind of skips a beat when that happens. That was pretty darn impressive.
I think in the presentation, they were definitely comparing it to the 13-inch MacBook Pro from a performance perspective because, you know, it doesn't have the dedicated GPU. And so you know, when you add up the performance of the 13-inch MacBook Pro and compare it to the Surface Book, sure, the Surface Book's a whole lot faster. But what would be interesting is if they compared the 15-inch MacBook Pro to the Surface Book.
Yeah. The other thing too, I know we're both on this one thread on Facebook with a bunch of people, and people were starting to compare it between MacBook Pro and everything. And it's like, to me though, it's really apples and oranges, because the big thing that makes me stay on the Apple platform compared to Windows, or compared to the Windows platform or the Surface platform, is OS X. I saw one person make this comment. It's the same thing I felt. I mean, I love all the hardware it was shown yesterday, but I still said, yeah, but it's got Windows on it. And it's not that I dislike Windows. It's that, to me, OS X feels faster. It feels more nimble. It feels more lightweight. It doesn't feel as heavy as Windows. I've played a little bit with Windows 10. It's not a judgmental thing on either one of these OSs. It's just, I'm a big proponent of, you know, get what works best for you. One person doesn't have to win. Just get what works best for you. For me, OS X is definitely working better for me today. I feel like I'm more productive with OS X. I'm very happy, though, to see Microsoft ship a really, really good hardware. They're getting really good reviews on Windows 10. It's really cool, because now I'm looking to Apple and being like, okay, you've had no competition on the MacBook Pro angle.
Pony up.
Now let's see what you guys are going to do. I don't want a touchscreen on my MacBook Pro. I could care less if you give me a touchscreen. That doesn't do anything for me. But I want to see what you guys do on the performance side. I want to see what you can do to make the MacBook Pro better than what we have today.
Yeah, for sure. I love the fact that it's a touchscreen. Like, over a MacBook Pros don't have touchscreens, and that annoys the crap out of me. I've got a MacBook Pro, and I wish it had a touchscreen. Hmm. And also the whole pencil thing, or the, you know, the pencil in the Mac in the Apple world, and then the pen in the Windows world.
Yeah,
that's kind of interesting. They changed the design of the pen a little bit. It's more like a pencil with the beveled edges or whatever, like a hexagon.
Yeah, it looks like a number two pencil.
Interchangeable tips, which I thought was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting. Good for artists and folks that do a lot of Photoshop work and sketching and stuff like that.
Yeah, I thought Panos was, he threw a couple pot shots at Apple and I thought were pretty freaking hilarious when he said something about that, you know, yeah, someone, we have a pen that has an eraser on it, but they have a pencil, there's no eraser on it. Does that make sense? So I thought that was kind of funny.
Hey, something interesting for those folks from an enterprise point of view is the Surface Book has a TPM chip in it. So you'd be able to do, like, you know, various things with that for enterprise security around certificates and keys and bits and bobs, which is it's a deal breaker for a lot of people.
Yep.
If you want to use one of these things in the enterprise.
These are going to be some cool devices to take a look at when these things finally come out, when we can actually sit down and play with some of this stuff. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Oh yeah. Definitely going to go into the Microsoft store and check out this hinge. The hinge looks fascinating to me.
Yeah, it really does. Everything about it is quite.
There's a lot of people that moan about the Surface Pro and that it's got a soft hinge, right? Mm. And that the lappability of it is really lame. Mm. I didn't have too much of a problem with it, but I can see why people say that. And this might take that concern away, but it's still detachable, yep. Right? So it's kind of the best of both worlds. Be interesting to see.
It is interesting. The tech that he was showing was pretty interesting with it. So it's only been a day. Haven't seen anybody kind of play with it all that much.
I think they called it muscle wire or something like that.
It was something where there's a wire that when you charge the wire, when you put a current to the wire, it either extends or it contracts, one of the two, but it changes to where you could see the hinge was kind of opening up more. It's cool. If you missed the show yesterday, I would definitely recommend you watch the videos for both Surface Pro 4 and the Surface Book. They did a really good job. I thought it was very funny how the second video, he's like, watch it just a little bit closer.
Yeah.
And you're watching it. And then you saw Twitter just go,
boom.
Sorry for everybody who's got sensitive ears, but everyone's like going, oh, f-. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about if you've seen the video. If you haven't, you'll know it when you see it. But you see him do this and you're like, oh my God. So it's very well done.
They did a good job of that.
Yeah.
That was nice.
Well, cool, man. Hey. Want to do some picks?
Yeah, why not? Let's do it.
Let's do some picks. So, do you want to go first?
Sure.
Go for it.
So, I took the plunge and moved to a 4K display.
Ooh.
Yeah, at Jeff Atwood's behest. So, I don't know if anybody knows who Jeff Atwood is, but he works at, basically one of the founders of Stack Overflow and a bunch of things. And he has a pretty cool blog on his website, blog.codinghorror.com. And he's got a blog post called Our Brave New World of 4K Displays.
Mm.
And he basically goes through you know, productivity with displays and DPI and yada, 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 and resolutions and all this. And he recommended this ASUS PB279Q 4K display. And so I got one and I hooked it up and damn, Willie. It's pretty sweet. It does 3840 by 2160.
Wow.
And it is, so it's a Retina display. If you sit more than about 2.5 feet away from it, it's a 27-inch display. So if you're about an arm's length away, it's a Retina display, or what Apple would call a Retina display in terms of pixel density and things.
I'm really curious to see this in person.
It is super smooth, and it does 60 hertz at that resolution over DisplayPort 1.2. Mm. You can flip it between 1.1 and 1.2. So it'll do 60 hertz at DisplayPort 1.2 at that res. It's pretty slick.
Yeah, that's something I've wanted to upgrade is my monitors. I've got three 27 inches driven by my MacBook Pro, two sitting side by side, and one sitting vertical in between them. That's kind of like my code window and my...
Yeah.
And I'm curious to see this.
You ain't driving more than one 4K display at 60 hertz with a MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. The new MacBook Pros will drive one of them at 60 hertz or two of them at 30. It's a crap load of pixels you got to drive.
Yeah, that's a lot. And that's your fan probably running. Is your fan run a bunch on that thing when you're driving it?
Not too bad, actually.
Really?
No, not normally. With Skype running in HD video, yeah, it starts fanning a bunch, but not normally, no.
Yeah, mine does that. I've got running two off Thunderbolt and one off HDMI. If I'm doing anything with video, then it does start to go a little, the fans do kick in, but that's cool, man. I'm looking forward to seeing that.
It's very easy on the eyes. Mm. Like, and I mean that like literally, like it's very nice to look at. The res really helps.
Mm. I hopefully get up there come out there for the MVP summit in about a month or so, jump and take a cab up to your new office and see the digs and
see your
screen.
Absolutely. Yeah. How about you?
I am almost finished with what has been one of the most fascinating books I've ever read, or I guess I'm listening to it. I'm doing an Audible. I always fumble this word, but you're familiar with something called Stuxnet?
The malware or the, for want of a better word.
Yeah. Yep. So
industrial espionage.
Yeah, exactly. So for anybody who's not familiar with this, Stuxnet is the, well, presumed virus built by the United States and potentially in conjunction with Israel to destroy centrifuges in Iran's nuclear program. And this guy, the name of the book is called Countdown to Zero Day, and it's by Kim Zetter or Zetter, Z-E-T-T-E-R. And it is the amount of detail in it. If you're a computer guy, which if you're listening to this and you're not, we'd like to talk to you and find out why are you listening to it. But
yeah, that's true.
If you're a computer guy and you like this kind of, you're curious about the tech side of this, my God, it is fascinating what they did to figure out and the attack they did. I didn't know all the details of what Stuxnet did, but it talks about how they had to put something out there to get data collection. And they finally, the way that they actually, the way that Stuxnet worked is this is fascinating. It would install itself using a couple different Windows hacks or Windows Zero Day exploits. It got itself installed on these machines that were connected to something, a Siemens PLC, which is kind of like a controller that would control different devices. And what it did is they had to figure out all the different settings and the configuration for the PLC Series 7 Siemens devices. And they had to figure out the different frequencies of the different power and stuff like that. And what they did is that when Stuxnet would get installed, it would first just go into a collection mode, and it would just be listening to the data from the centrifuges that were working. Do you know all this stuff? Have you read the details of this stuff?
I haven't read the book, but I know a bunch about what happened. Yeah.
Yeah. So it collected all the data of what was happening. And then when it was done, when it was done collecting all that data, it would then go to sleep and then it would turn itself back on. And for about 2 hours, it would attack by opening and closing valves and changing the power frequencies. which would damage the devices and actually cause like the uranium gas to solidify. And then when it would spin the centrifuges back up, so it would be banging around the inside, and these things are running at like supersonic speeds. And so it would knock them off their hinges and off the bearings and destroy them and knock them into other ones. And
I think I saw a video floating around on the internet of some guy running away from one of these things, shaking itself to bits.
Yeah. And so, well, they tested all the stuff in Oak Ridge in Tennessee, in the National Nuclear Laboratory in Tennessee. They got a bunch of the devices from a sea shipment of centrifuges that were on their way to Libya. This is about when Libya backed out of their whole nuclear program. And what it would do is that after it collected all this data, and then it would start attacking, while it was attacking, it was feeding back the data that it had recorded back to the operator. So they thought everything was running just fine.
Oh.
Because it was just simply replaying. Like when you see in the movies where they replay the video,
yeah,
it was basically just doing that. And it'd go back and forth, but they wouldn't attack all the centrifuges. They would just attack some of them. And there's a way where you have to go through and you purify, or you get a, I can't remember what the term is, but you get a certain purification of the gas, but you have to move it through different stages. So you have like these banks of like, say 100 centrifuges and then another 200 and then another 100 or whatever, and you go through like all these stages, and it wouldn't attack the beginning stages. It would attack the end stages, so that you would take more time processing the gas, and then you would lose all this work that you had done at the very end by destroying these things. It was the way that companies like Symantec and Kapernsky Labs, and the way that they figured out what was going on and the details of what it did as a computer geek, it's been so fascinating that I've been on a run. I listen to books like this when I'm out for a run, because it distracts me from my run and I just kind of go on autopilot. The other day I ran an extra 0.7 mile, not realizing, because I was just stuck in the book.
Nice. Just the end of this chapter. I just want to get to the end of this chapter.
Oh, is.
So what's the name of the book?
Countdown to Zero Day.
All right, cool.
Yeah, it's on Audible. It's also a book you can go read in the paper, so, or on the Kindle.
We'll have to check it out.
Yeah, man.
Nice. That's a good one.
Cool stuff.
Right on, man. Thanks for the show.
Absolutely. So, hey, next show, I'm excited about this. We've already done the interview, but we're going to hold it for a week. Next show, episode 99, is going to be a fun one. We interviewed a guy named Andrew Liu from Microsoft talking about DocumentDB. And I found it.
Yes.
I found our discussion we had with him incredibly helpful to me. I think it was kind of funny, because I think we even said during the show that you and I were evaluating DocumentDB for projects. We're like, yes, I have these questions here I need to ask in a way.
I've got these personal questions.
So hypothetically, if I was doing this.
Yeah, what would you do? Yeah.
So we got some free consulting, but we recorded it.
Nice. There you go. No, it's a really cool show. I think people should look forward to that. If you don't know a lot about DocumentDB, it's a really nice overview and gets into some pretty tricky topics too. So that's cool.
Absolutely. Cool, man.
Right on.
All right. I guess we should start getting some real work and we should wrap this up.
10-4.
All right, man. Good talking to you.
See ya.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAVE or an MP3 file and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Eric by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can find us on Facebook searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.